This is a podcast from the children's radio station Fun Kids. Listen on DAB digital radio across the UK or online at funkidslive.com.
Welcome to the Fun Kids Science Weekly. Hello, my name's Dan, and now this is the show where we answer all of the baffling but amazing questions that the universe throws out there every single day. Now, if you're ever in science class, right, and the teacher says something incredible that makes your ears prick up, and you look, but then they kind of move on, and they talk about something else, and they never touch on just how amazing that was, and you want to know more, this is the show for you. Today, we're chatting to someone who could help you help all the bats that are visiting your back garden every night. Also, we'll hear why a gigantic iceberg is floating around the ocean on its own, and our Dangerous Dan fact file today is a devastatingly deadly beast with the most misleading name in the world. That's on in a little bit. First, let's catch up with one of our favourite geniuses at Fun Kids. He is by far the smartest person that I know, and he always manages to investigate in places that you would never think of. Today, Professor Hallux is inside the human body.
Professor Hallux looking inside the human body, with support from the Royal College of Radiologists.
What's up, buddy? Oh dear, he really doesn't look very well, Professor.
Never mind that. The door to the fridge is locked and I can't find the keys. I had a really big bunch of them just now. Oh, I wanted to put some jam on my toast.
Can we concentrate on body? He's really not well.
Of course, of course. So, what we need is a diagnosis, which means...
figuring out what the problem is. Come here, body. Lie down. Now, oh, you're not yourself, are you, dear?
Diagnosing illnesses is a bit like being a detective, looking for clues, going over the evidence, riding around in a police car.
It does not mean riding around in a police car, Professor. Do try to concentrate.
There are loads of ways we can diagnose the problem. Do you know that people have been diagnosing illnesses for even longer than people have had illnesses? Actually, that wouldn't work, would it? Well, it's been going on a long time, and I'm going to be using some of the most ancient scientific techniques to solve this mystery.
What are you doing?
I'm sniffing body.
You're tickling him. Stop it. Oh.
Now I'm having a good old taste of his sweat.
Stop it. That's really not hygienic.
Well, you think that's bad? Wait until I taste his wee.
You are not going to be tasting anyone's wee.
Well, you should know that the ancient Greeks used all those methods to figure what was the matter with poorly people. They believed in using all their senses, sight, taste, feel, smell, sound, and so forth, to do the job.
Yes, but that's ancient history. Things have moved on a little bit.
Now I've done smell and taste, I'm going to feel him all over. Come here, body. Let me get my hands on you. Chinese medicine has a long history of using touch to figure out what's wrong, you know?
Yes, but not by tickling. When doctors use touch to diagnose, they're trying to see if the body feels warmer or cooler than it should, if there are any lumps or bumps, and measuring things like heartbeats and blood pressure.
Well, body's tummy feels a bit lumpy, but then he did have 12 bowls of candy rocks for breakfast. Let's do sight next. Well, you look okay to me, and I can't hear much. Go on, jump up and down a bit. Aha! Now that's interesting. Hear that, nurse?
That is definitely not normal.
Shame it's so muffled. Luckily, even the ancient doctors figured out that it would be easier to see, feel, smell, taste, and all that if they had a few gadgets to help them. Now what gadget is going to let me hear what's going on in there?
Professor.
Well, how else am I going to find out what's going on in there?
Look, you're mostly right. Doctors have and always will use all their senses to work out what's making someone unwell. And they've always used tools and gadgets to help. But they find that the job is a lot easier when they use the right tools for the job. And the right tool is not a chainsaw. You want to hear? Then why not use a special medical gadget that makes things louder? Any ideas?
Any ideas?
Ow! Why are you shouting into my stethoscope? Oh, right. Well, that doesn't sound like candy rocks. It sounds like a big bunch of metal in there. Like a big metal bunch of... something.
The keys!
Well, I blame you, Nanobot. He heard you saying how iron is an important part of a balanced diet. Right, let's see what's going on in there.
Put that down.
Well, a stethoscope's all very well for hearing, but how am I going to see for sure?
Well, just like the stethoscope allows us to hear, we can use other machinery to see inside. X-ray, CT, ultrasound and MRI scans, using special waves that see inside body's body, without making him worse.
Of course. There's even a name for all that stuff. Diagnostic radiology. Immensely clever technology. Come on, let's go take a closer look.
Professor Hallett looking inside the human body with support from the Royal College of Radiologists. Find out more at funkidslive.com/Hallett.
There is loads more episodes of Professor Halleck's Adventures that you can catch up on for free on your phone or tablet. Get to iTunes, get to the free Fun Kids app, and look at funkidslive.com. Now, I once knew someone who genuinely, it's a true story, he used to wear a scarf around his neck all year round, no matter what the weather, because he was afraid of being attacked and bitten by a vampire bat. I know, right? We'll find out why he was wrong in just a sec. First, I got a quick question. Have you left us a review yet on the iTunes podcast store? If you love the Fun Kids Science Weekly, if you love all the big guests that we get on, then I would love it if you got out your phone or your tablet and left us a review. You think of it as a thank you for all the dangerous and deadly creatures that I'm warning you about every week. Think of it as a reward for me saving your life every 7 days. Is that all right? Brilliant. Just find the Fun Kids Science Weekly, yeah, on the iTunes podcast store. Leave us a nice review. Drop us 5 stars if you could, and also leave your name in there as well. And next week, I will say hello to you. It's the Fun Kids Science Weekly. Now, our special guest this week knows all about a creature that I reckon is a little bit misunderstood. Hannah Van Hesteren is from the Bat Conservation Trust. She's on the phone. Hey, Hannah.
Hi.
Now, we'll start off. What bats do we have here in the UK?
Oh, we've got loads. We've actually got 18 different species of bats in the UK. So that ranges from tiny, tiny bats that are about the size of your thumb. They're called pipistrelles. And then we've even got bats that are represented by just one individual for the whole species.
Which one is that? Who's on his own?
He's called a greater mouse-eared.
And do we know where it is? Is it in conservation to help it out, or does it just fly off on its own?
So we think that he just joins us for the winter so that he can hibernate here with us in the south.
So 18 species all around the country. Do we know where they kind of are specialised, where their habitats are? Are they spread out in particular areas?
Yeah, so bats look for a number of things when they're choosing where to live. What they need is somewhere nice and dark, so they'll tend to be in rural areas because of that. They need somewhere with loads of food, so bats only eat insects. So if there's really rich plant diversity with really rich insect diversity, bats will like that. And they need somewhere with lots of roost opportunities. So the majority of bats in the UK are actually crevice dwellers, which means they like to sort of squeeze into the tiniest little nooks and crannies, like in trees or old buildings and caves, things like that. So they'll look for places that have old trees or old buildings and things, but they've actually lost a lot of their natural habitat. They would prefer to be in the trees and caves, but we've lost a lot of that because people are building houses and things like that. So they've actually been forced into our houses more recently. So it's not uncommon to find bats in cities and in towns and other urban areas like that.
Now, we know the way animals work in their environment is they kind of, they evolve to live and survive in the best place for them. Why have bats grown to live in the dark, in, as you say, tiny little crevices that are hidden away in nooks and crannies?
Well, that's a good question. In the crevices, that will be in the daytime, so they actually sleep in those in the daylight hours. And it's probably because they can avoid predators that way. So by flying around at night, they'll avoid lots of animals that are out in the daytime that might like to come and eat them. And because of their ability to forage at night and fly at night, they've actually they get around using echolocation. So they're not blind. They will use their eyes, but they'll also use their hearing to get around in the dark.
So why does everyone think that they are blind? Where's this myth come from?
I don't know. They've got quite a bad rep. People often associate them with, you know, vampires and things like that. And sometimes people even think that bats will get into your hair, which isn't true. So maybe that's why. Maybe they think they can't see where they're going.
So well, let's talk about them being misunderstood for a little bit. As you say, vampire bats, we do associate them as being like evil creatures. What are they like when you get to know them?
So the bats in the UK are not vampire bats. There's only three species of those, and those are in Central America. So all of our bats, they're really lovely animals. They're the only true flying mammals in the world, so they're really special that way. They're incredibly social, so mums spend a lot of their time caring for their babies, and they actually get together in groups in the summer so that each mum can have her one baby of the year, and they'll do that like a bit of teamwork, and all the babies will keep each other company and keep each other warm there. They spend an awful lot of time actually just chatting to each other, and bats actually will sing to each other, and they're very, very social. They'll spend a lot of time grooming and things like that. So it's a shame that they're so misunderstood, because they're actually really incredible and sweet animals.
Are they good singers? What kind of sound do their voices make like that?
Not noises that we'd be able to hear without special equipment. But I've never heard a bat sing, so I don't know.
Oh, really? So why can we not hear them?
So bats will echolocate at a really, really high frequency. So that's above our hearing range, but it's within their hearing range. So what happens is they echolocate almost like, you know, sonar that dolphins would use and things like that. So they make these shouting noises, which are actually so loud that they might deafen the bat if they didn't have these special muscles in their ears that stop them from deafening themselves. They shout as loud as they can, and then they wait for the echo to bounce off of objects in front of them. So whether that be a nearby tree or a nearby building, they can even hear bounces of sound coming off of insects. So that's how they find their prey. And the more, the closer they get to something, the quicker the bounce comes back. So that they're able to really efficiently navigate their way through landscapes and pick up the tiniest insects out of the air.
We were talking earlier about how bats have kind of evolved their environment, and they've got this echolocation going on to get around. Can they see at all well in the dark? Have their eyes adapted to pitch blackness?
So bats in the UK, because they do echolocate, they can see, but it's just about as well as we would be able to see in the dark. So, you know, not completely blind, but not really well enough to get around without bumping into things.
And what are they going around hunting at night? What do bats tend to eat?
So they'll eat insects. That'll be midges, pest insects that usually are cropped. They'll eat moths. They'll eat spiders even. So creepy crawlies, really.
And when we think of bats, like the standard image is one hanging upside down from a cave or from a branch. Why do they do this? Why can't they just stand upright like a regular animal?
Well, that's a good question. We actually only have two species out of our 18 that do that. So we've got horseshoe bats, greater and lesser horseshoe bats, which are found in the southwest. They will hang up from their feet in caves. I don't know why they do that. But other bats will get into the little crevices, and they squeeze themselves into holes. So they don't hang at all. They'll like something to be right up against their front and something right up against their back. But they don't hang at all.
How important are they to the ecosystem in ways that we might not realise?
So bats in the UK especially are incredibly important. They're amazing pest controllers. So they eat the insects that would otherwise be eating our crops and things like that. And they're actually indicators of a really healthy ecosystem. So if you've got bats around, that's an indicator that you live in a really healthy ecosystem. So that will mean there's lots and lots of insect life around, but there'll also be animals that will be able to prey on bats, and it will be a really nice, rich range of species living in that area.
And you're from the Bat Conservation Trust, so how can, like, I in my back garden tonight go out and be more helpful to bats?
So there's lots of things that you can do. We always recommend providing what we call a bat B&B, so bed and breakfast. The first thing they'll want is somewhere to sleep, so roosting opportunities are great. You can actually really easily build bat boxes or put bat boxes up on buildings and trees. That will give the bats somewhere to sleep. But they'll also want something to eat, so gardening for bats is a really good idea. If you're planting plants that have really nice smelly flowers that insects will be attracted to, and nice bright flowers that night flying insects will be attracted to, bats will be attracted that, and they'll have nice food that will draw them in. But if you've also got some water there, bats will come to that. So they need to drink, of course. But also lots of insects will spend some of their life cycle in the water. And then that can be a really good source of insects as well. And the other thing is, by keeping it nice and dark, bats can be quite turned off by the light, and they'll avoid those areas. So, turning off lights and things like that outside can help.
Amazing. I'm going to get to work now setting up my own bat B&B. Love the name. Hannah, thank you so much for coming on the Fun Kids Science Weekly.
Thank you.
Right, time for this week's Dangerous Dan, where we look at something mean and deadly that's in the universe. Today, it's a creature that I reckon you never thought could be dangerous. Because the cone snail is one of the most venomous animals in the world. I'll repeat that. It's a snail. Now, the cone snail lives at the bottom of the seabed, or it's hiding between rocks in warm water around America and Africa. And it looks like a small, precious, colourful stone that's camouflaged in the sand. And all you want to do is pick it up and put it on your nan's mantelpiece at home. But don't. That would be ridiculously stupid. It would be a mistake. They have highly specialised teeth. They're called raduli. And they're a bit like a needle and a harpoon. They shoot out of the snail's mouth. They pierce floating prey and they drag it towards them. And then the tooth is filled with the snail's toxin and it paralyzes the victim and it feasts upon them in the snail's own time. Usually that's very slowly. Brutal, it's kind of mean, right? Now, this is one of the most venomous creatures in the world, mainly because it's not shy. Now, a lot of these animals kind of wait to be attacked, but the cone snail does the opposite. It's constantly throwing its teeth out there. It's always being a predator for something, and it's designed to kill fish, but it is deadly to humans as well, mostly because we don't have an antidote to the cone snail's venom. The doctor just has to kind of keep you alive until it wears off. And it's shocking that they're so dangerous. I reckon you'll never look at a snail in your back garden or an ornamental shell at your nan's house in the same way again. We will get one of your science questions answered by our expert Tom in just a sec. First, I've got an episode of our Space Cadet series to play for you. You can find all of these for free, by the way, on the Fun Kids app, on iTunes, and over at funkidslive.com. Today, the episode is a really good one. It's all about Harry and Terry. They were queuing up for a hot dog when zoop! They've been rocketed up to space. They're now space cadets. And today they're exploring the sun.
Welcome along to the astral adventures of the Space Cadets.
Hold still, boy.
They're just little rockets, just to give you a bit more propulsion.
Quick, Terry, tie them to his legs.
What are you boys up to? You best not be doing another experiment on RoboWoof.
No, of course not. Fire.
Will you two please stop messing about? After you've cleaned up this mess, we've got another job from Mission Control.
Ooh, do they want another report on what sandwiches taste best in space?
No, Harry. They said the last one you wrote was plenty detailed enough, especially as they never asked you to write it. And they don't want to see part two of your cosmic condiments essay either.
Oh, so what have we got to do then, Zingy?
Mission Control would like us to go and find out more about the sun. Fasten your space belts, you two. Off we go. Terry, please put your clothes back on.
Sorry, I just thought I'd do a bit of sunbathing.
We're only 100,000 miles away from the sun's surface. At this distance, the sun's heat is far too strong for sunbathing.
What about toasting marshmallows?
No, Harry. Far too hot for that too.
Oh.
Luckily, Spaceship Intrigue is made from a revolutionary thermostable alloy, which means we're pretty well protected from the sun's heat. If we weren't, the temperature on board would be over 1,000 degrees. This ship's predecessor, Spaceship Indestructible, learned that the hard way. And remember, you must never look directly at the sun, from wherever you're viewing it from. The sun's rays can be extremely dangerous when viewed with a naked eye. Here, view the sun on this special observation screen.
Wow, look, Terry, it's absolutely massive.
I can calculate that the sun is about 109 times the size of Earth.
Huh? The sun's white. But on Earth, the sun looks yellow.
Yes, the sun appears white from space. It's only on Earth that the sun looks yellow because of the way the light is refracted through the atmosphere. The Earth is so far away from here that the sun's light takes over 8 minutes to reach the Earth's surface.
So the light from the sun is what gives us daylight on Earth?
Yes, exactly. Without the sun, there would be no life on Earth. All the plants on Earth depend on the sun's energy for photosynthesis.
Ooh, I'm going to go and get Spiky from my bag. He'll love this much sun.
Who's Spiky?
Terry's favourite cactus. Those two have been through a lot together.
There you go, lad. Photosynthesise all you like. He's loving the sunlight.
Yes, plants do. They convert energy from the sun into food through photosynthesis. Luckily, Earth is the perfect distance from the sun to receive just the right amount of light.
No, Robo-Woof. No spacewalkies today. The sun is way too hot, even with your hat on.
How hot is the surface of the sun, Zingy?
I can calculate that the surface of the sun must be over 5,500 degrees.
Wow, you hear that, Robo-Woof? You'd be a hot dog in seconds.
But the sun's over 4 billion years old, isn't it, Zingy? How does it stay that hot?
The sun is like a constant nuclear reactor. Its immense heat and density fuses hydrogen atoms into helium through nuclear fusion. This process creates loads of heat, light, and energy, which is what keeps the sun incredibly bright and hot. Although it's been around for billions of years, it still fuses 620 million tons of hydrogen every single second.
Whoa, what's happening?
It seems that Spaceship Intrigue is about to overheat. That alarm is the warning sign that we need to get out of here. Such a pity they never fitted Spaceship Inflammable with the alarm feature. Have we finished the report on the sun, boys?
Yep, all done.
Excellent. I'll fire these notes off to Mission Control right away. Right, let's get out of here before we start burning up. System clear. Temperature stable.
Phew! It's amazing to think the sun will remain so hot and powerful forever.
Well, actually, the sun will not remain in that state forever. The sun is our nearest star, and all stars have a life cycle. Our sun is currently in its main sequence, using its supply of hydrogen fuel to produce helium and all that heat and light via nuclear fusion. But when the hydrogen fuel supply is used up, the sun will expand to many hundreds of times its size, becoming a red giant. Then will eventually collapse under its own gravity into a tiny white dwarf.
Whoa, so our sun's got a lot to come then.
Yes, indeed. But this won't happen for many billions of years, so let's not bother Mission Control with it just yet.
I like your style, Zingy. Stick the kettle on, I fancy a nice cup of tea.
It's boiled.
That was quick.
Being this close to the sun does have its benefits.
Join us next time for more Astro Adventures with the Space Cadets.
Yeah, remember, if you do love the Space Cadets, please catch up on all of our brilliant episodes on your phone or tablet. Get to the Fun Kids app, get to iTunes, and you can listen anywhere over at funkidslive.com. We'll find out why a gigantic iceberg has been floating all by itself all around the sea with no other iceberg mates in just a second. Science in the news. First, it's time to welcome our expert to the Fun Kids Science Weekly. He's Tom. He's here every single week to answer your science question, right? And it doesn't matter what it is. It could be about the rings of Saturn or the delicious Moorishness of an iced ring donut. Could be anything. Just send it over to my page at funkidslive.com and I'll get it answered. Today's question is from Charles, who is 11, and he asks, Tom, how do crystals form?
Well, a crystal's made up of molecules, like everything else. The thing that sets the crystal apart is to do with its structure, how the molecules fit together. So with a crystal, when it forms, it's a very uniform pattern. So throughout the crystal, you will see the same bonds between the molecules, the same pattern. Whereas something like a table, it will have very ununiform pattern. It'll be not quite random, but it'll have a lot of inconsistencies, and that's why it doesn't look like a crystal.
Why do things then form differently? Why have crystals formed so uniformly and almost so perfectly, where there's other random rocks hanging off cliffs? They're kind of ugly, you don't really like them, and they're not uniform at all.
Depends on the type of molecule. So the molecule will be different for a rock and a crystal. Also depends on the pressure. So sometimes the pressure will be so high that it's almost forced into this uniform shape because there's no other way for it to fit together.
Right, time to see what sciencey stuff has been in the news this week. A skeleton fossil from around 49,000 years ago has shown that the Neanderthal kids didn't grow so differently as you do today. So these are cave kids. They're mainly the same looking. The only difference is that their backbone and their brain developed a little bit slower than you do today. And that kids back then, they lived to an average of 7 years old. So young. Count yourself lucky. Also, Australia has joined the UK in the space radar mission. They're helping to launch a spacecraft which will help us better understand the world. It looks a bit like a giant cheese grater, and it will hang in the sky, and it will use radar to analyse clouds, light and water levels. And finally, a gigantic iceberg is at last on the move across the sea. Remember this? A few months ago, a bit of ice broke away from Antarctica and it was just floating around the same space of ocean. But latest satellite images has shown that the 6,000 square kilometre bit of ice, it's called A68, which is the size of London, it's now heading north into the Weddell Sea. Look out then. Right. Let's get a brand new series on the Fun Kids Science Weekly. It's all about George, who is researching farming for a school project, and it's called The Grain Chain.
George explores The Grain Chain with support from farmers and millers across the UK.
Hi there. Now, because my school project is on The Grain Chain, checking out farms and how they grow their crops is a really important part of the story. I already knew that the main cereal crops that farmers grow are wheat, barley and oats, but I didn't know how busy a farmer's year was. It all starts around the end of autumn. Around the time when we're enjoying Halloween and bonfire night, farmers will be out in the cold ploughing their fields and sowing the seeds. They'll also give them a good spray to help keep pesky weeds and bugs away. Once that's done, they'll just have to wait a wee while for the seeds to germinate and start to grow. But by spring, the crops will be well on the way, and with a bit of luck, will be growing nice and strong, producing loads of shoots. The farmer wants to keep them nice. He will help the crops grow by treating them with fertilizer until... By early summer, the cereal crops will have grown their ears. That's the bit where the grains are. The weather plays a big part in how successful the crop is. A bad summer can mean a poor crop, and in parts of the world, that can make the difference between food and no food. When it's ready, over the late summer, most likely when you're having a nice relax on your school summer holidays, the crops will be harvested using a combined harvester. As well as cutting the stalks, these huge machines will separate out the grain. These stalks are valuable to farmers. Once they're cut, the stalks will be baled and left to dry, which, as well as providing a food for cows and horses, can also make a nice bed for animals. If it's even a teeny weeny bit damp, grain may rot, and that's the last thing the farmer wants. So the grain has to be dried and stored on the farm before being sent to the mill to be made into flour. Once the harvest is done, whilst it may sound like there would be time for our farmers to take a holiday, there's no chance. He or she will have to start the farming cycle all over again, ploughing and preparing the fields for the next crop. But before all that, they'll get a chance to take a breather and celebrate the harvest and try some of their produce at a local harvest festival. Phew! I'm getting hungry just thinking about it. Let's get back inside and get cooking. Here it is. Today I've made a tasty fruit loaf called Barra Breath, and it smells fantastic. There are stacks of different types of bread from all over the world, like chapatis and pear breads. But this one is from the UK. Wales, in fact, where the Welsh dragons live. Let's get a slice. You have to cut Barra Breath in nice thick slices, and there's nothing better to put on top than a big thick layer of real butter. Fruit and bread together might sound a bit crazy, but it's delicious. See you soon.
George explores The Grain Chain with support from farmers and millers across the UK.
We've got loads more episodes from The Grain Chain that you can catch up on. Get to the Fun Kids app, get to iTunes, and have a listen over at funkidslive.com. That is it then for this week's Fun Kids Science Weekly. We'll be back next week with more weird and wonderful awesomeness. from the universe all around us. Remember, if you've got a question that you want answered, doesn't matter how silly or ridiculous that you think it is, I promise you it's amazing, and we'll try and get expert Tom to answer it. You can send it to my page at funkidslive.com. And while you're on there, online, make sure you check out all of our other brilliant science series. You can listen there, and you can download them for free on the Fun Kids app and over at funkidslive.com. And you can hear Fun Kids all over the country on your DAB digital radio, on the free Fun Kids app, and over at funkidslive.com.
So that was a podcast from the children's radio station Fun Kids. Listen on DAB digital radio across the UK or online at funkidslive.com.